This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
I'm Dave Baker.
And I'm Andrew Price.
Welcome to Deep Cuts, the podcast where we pick a topic and walk you through the ins, the outs, and the nitty-gritty, so you can appear like an interesting and idiosyncratic person at your next forced social function. Today's topic is...
The Mothman.
Who is the Mothman? He's a creature that has been lurking in the forests of the American heartland and in our imaginations. He's a legend of a purported bipedal winged creature that has, if you believe it, presaged just about every massive tragedy or historical event over the past 50 years.
Where was our warning about COVID, you piece of shit?
Fuck you, Mothman. Act 1. Richard Gere, the Mothman, and a construction worker who's currently employed building a bridge, walk into a bar. The legend of the Mothman was born in West Virginia in 1966, when a 7-foot-tall creature with a massive wingspan was spotted in the town of Point Pleasant. In the years since, this piece of local folklore has taken flight and become a global mystery. On November 15th, 1966, Roger and Linda Scarberry and their mutual friends, Steve and Mary Millette, were driving through an area of Point Pleasant referred to as the TNT, named for the World War II manufacturing plant located in the area. As their car sped through the murky darkness of the forest, they chanced upon something that would change their lives forever. The Scarberry's headlights revealed a large gray creature with red, glowing eyes and a massive wingspan. The creature had stopped in the middle of the road and quickly turned its head to stare in a foreboding glance at the oncoming vehicle. As the car veered to avoid hitting it, the creature flew off into the nearby swamplands. The car screeched to a halt, almost careening off the road and into the trees. Shocked, the four people sat in stunned silence for a moment, and then Steve Mallett, hearing something, looked out of the rear view window of the car and claims that he saw those large, red, glowing eyes of the creature zooming down the road towards them. Roger stepped on the gas, jolting the car forward. The creature gave chase as the vehicle steadily increased its speed. Roger eventually claimed that he was driving as fast as the car could go, nearly 100 miles per hour. But the flying creature kept up. That is, until the car left the TNT and the creature just disappeared into the night. The two couples were understandably very shaken by this experience and spent the next few days telling everyone what they had seen. They tried to convince the townspeople of Point Pleasant that their story was true, and they had in fact witnessed a massive flying red-eyed creature that had chased their car at over 100 miles per hour. Over the next few days, other Point Pleasant residents claimed to witness this winged creature as well. From brief glances in the distance to full-on face-to-face confrontations, two volunteer firefighters, a city contractor named Newell Partridge, and a few others all came forward with stories. It was around this time that the tales of the bizarre creature began to take on a life of their own. People started reported seeing the creature outside of Point Pleasant, indeed all over the Midwest. The stories went whatever the 60s equivalent of viral was, perhaps mostly due to the fact that, in a published story about the sightings of the creature, an Ohio newspaper coined the term Mothman.
Back in the 60s, viral was called mind polio.
God, that's fucked. So before we get into the depths and the kookiness of this too deeply, I'm curious what your exposure to the Mothman was prior to us doing this. Were you a Mothman fan? Let me rephrase the question. Papa Pricey, dost thou thinketh this moth spooky bitch is real?
I mean, I think saying whether I think this is real or not is a bit of a spoiler for just the rest of the episode.
Okay. Well, then were you interested in the Mothman? Did you like the Mothman prior?
For sure. Yeah, 100%. My exposure to the Mothman was, I don't remember exactly what came first. As we'll talk about later, we're going to talk about the movie, but I saw the Mothman prophecies in movie theaters. So it was back in 2002. I saw this in the theater. I remember that we also rented it when it came out, which was not necessarily a indication that we thought the movie was really good. I think it just, you know, you tended to do that back in the day. There was fewer things to do. So
your life didn't get sucked away because of social media, just sitting there scrolling infinitely. You had to rent movies.
I have to watch Mothman prophecies twice. I have to go to the theater with my dad over the weekend and watch Mask of Zorro and then come home on Sunday and then go with my mom to see Mask of Zorro the next day and fall asleep in the movie theater because I already saw it the day before.
How familiar were you when you, like, did you go deep? How familiar are you with?
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying is I don't remember like what came first. I don't remember if I saw that movie first or if I had read stuff about it previously. But I mean, back in those days, my only connection with learning about these things was checking out books from the library. So reading random books about like Greek mythology or, you know, random cryptid creatures or whatever it was. And at some point I had read a book that contained stuff about Mothman. And I can't remember if it came before or after I saw that movie. The Mothman was interesting to me because it almost was scarier, because a lot of other like ghost stories and cryptid stories feature some element of like imminent threat to the people involved. Like an alien will abduct you and perform experiments on you or take you forever. And, you know, a lot of these monsters, they'll like eat you or kill you or whatever. But the Mothman was like almost scarier because it was like, you don't know what its intentions are. Like, it's not trying to kill you. It's like just there. And then it gives you like a fucking foreboding prophecy about the future. And for some reason that the fact that it wasn't like, oh, I'm just a monster that wants to kill you. It was like even scarier to me. And the Mothman like really freaked me out.
Prior to investigating this and learning more about it, which now I'm like super into the Mothman, but prior, I didn't really have a lot of connection to him for one reason or another. It was just kind of like, it was a thing I was aware of, but I think in my head, for some reason, I thought the Mothman was the Jersey Devil. Like, I thought they were kind of the same thing, like Sasquatch and Bigfoot, but they are very much not, and I've never, we'll get to that later. Yeah, so it's interesting. The stuff that we're going to cover in this is actually way more interesting than I had necessarily thought that it might be initially.
I just remember reading a story within a bigger book of what I now know are cryptids, but at the time I just thought were like urban legend monsters about the Mothman, just the basic story of it. And I remember it just haunting me because I'm like, what does it want? What is its intentions? Then that just freaked me the fuck out.
Initially, the Mothman moniker confused people because in some stories, the creature was called a Birdman. In fact, a rival paper, the Beckley Herald Dispatch, had tried to rename the character the Mason Bird Monster in a piece written by journalist Ralph Turner and published in November of 1966. However, the Mason Bird Monster never really caught on.
Hey mom, can we stop and get some Mothman? We have Mothman at home. Mothman at home, the Mason Bird Monster. That's such a shitty name.
The fact that these sightings described a Birdman wasn't actually true of the origins of its catchy name, as an unknown copy editor at the previously mentioned newspaper named him the Mothman after a villain on the popular 1966 Batman TV show, The Killer Moth. The Killer Moth would later go on to be renamed Charaxis in the comics. Basically, people in this fucking car, they're going down the fucking swamplands, driving, having a good time. Low key, they're probably swingers. There's four of them in a car late at night. Why would you be there? They're trying to get their fuck on. So they're driving. And then one of them is like, oh my God, what is that in the street? Or the road that's dimly lit? It's a giant bird-like monster. Definitely not just a bird. Totally not just a bird.
Totally not just a large bird during a time when less information about science and nature was generally broadly known.
There's no way that it could be some sort of stork. There's no way that in West Virginia marshland that there's any sort of wildlife.
Those motherfuckers back in the 1700s saw manatees and were like, that's a hot girl. They were, your eyes play tricks on you when you're in precarious situations. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So there's, and also like when you look at what, okay, so its identifying characteristics are that it has a large size, wings, and red glowing eyes. Birds, like cats, have eyes that reflect light. So if you shine light at a bird's eyes late at night, they glow red because the blood vessels inside their eyes catch the light and reflect it back.
Yeah, and we have some kind of thing in our eye that prevents that from happening.
Yeah. So humans, yeah. So there's no possible way that the Mothman, who was actually the Mason bird monster, who was actually probably just a definitely not a bird. There's no way it was a bird. So they see it. It catches on. A bunch of people in the local town, Point Pleasant, start either playing along or they also just forget what the fuck birds are. They start seeing all these sightings. A newspaper across the state line, across the Mason line, Mason River, I think, maybe is the dividing line between two of those states. I don't know. I'm from Arizona. We don't have schools there. In a neighboring county in another state names the monster the Mothman because they think, oh, it's like just some stupid urban folklore. Like, I'll just fuck it. I watched an episode of Batman last night where they had this moth. That's kind of cool. Bird monsters, been there, done that. Moth monster, interesting. So they rebrand it. It sticks, kind of goes viral. And I just think it is so funny that he's fucking named after the killer moth, aka Charaxis. From Batman. I just think that's so fucking funny.
What if he had just been like watching Bewitched instead? And then it was called
the Paul Lind neighbor character.
It was just called Paul Lind. Welcome to Deep Cuts. On this episode, we were talking about the Paul Lind monster.
I'm here to tell you about some horrible tragedies that are gonna transpire in the near future.
We'd be living in a whole different world that if that journalist was watching Bewitched.
Yeah, but it's interesting because we're gonna get into how the Mothman character evolves over time. But it's interesting that in this initial period of about a year between mid 66 and middle to end 67. He's kind of just, he doesn't really, none of the characteristics are there yet. He's just this weird, beefy, winged, red glowing eyed monster. Like, nobody can really agree what he looks like. Some people say he has a head. Some people say he doesn't have a head. Some people say he's got large claws. Some people say he looks more bird-like. Some people then, because of the name, start claiming that they see him as a giant moth.
Some people say that the reason for all these disparate, not agreed upon corroborations of what the Mothman looks like is because they're all just seeing different animals that are all unrelated. And
somebody starts describing it as a quadruped, small rodent-like animal with like a almost kind of like a domino mask across its eyes. And when the local police are like, that's a fucking raccoon, then the person starts screaming, how dare you infringe on my rights? This was the Mothman. Yeah, you know, it's weird. The continued sightings of Mothman would pepper throughout the next year. Witnesses all over the Midwest would claim to have interacted with a winged man of some sort. Some even got close enough to touch him, reporting that he smelled like a woodland animal. However, on December 15th, 1967, a tragedy would take place that would propel the character into global recognition. Thanks for listening to this episode. You should definitely go like the Facebook page for the Deep Cuts Pod because we do lots of cool video content on there that you'll be sure to like. Also, please join our Facebook group.
That's Deep Cuts Podcast on Facebook and the Deep Cuts Podcast Facebook group. Also, follow us on Instagram at Deep Cuts Pod.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Act 2, The Silver Bridge Incident. The Silver Bridge, a large suspension bridge spanning the Ohio River and connecting West Virginia and Ohio, mysteriously and suddenly collapsed in 1967. The quaking and ultimately crumbling of the bridge was said to be heard from miles around. 31 cars plunged into the river, injuring more than 60 people and killing 46. The Silver Bridge was constructed in 1928 and opened for public use on May 30th of that year. At 700 feet high and more than 2,000 feet long, the bridge, which was ultimately built entirely out of steel, was a staple of interstate travel. However, neither law enforcement nor state or local officials could offer any tangible cause for the sudden collapse of the major road link between the two states. In that information vacuum, local legends spread like wildfire, with tall tales spinning up almost instantly as to why the bridge went down.
That's the linchpin, for me at least, in this story. The thing that I find most fascinating is that little moment right there, because, you know, we now know that the reason why the bridge collapsed was because there was just some piece, this little like piece that eroded and broke. And it just caused like a Rube Goldberg machine of all these things failing, and the bridge collapsed. But they, you know, they didn't know that at the time. And, you know, as we were kind of joking about before, if you think that conspiracy theories spread now in a vacuum of ignorance, like just imagine back then where, yeah, the information couldn't spread as fast or as large or global as it can now, but they're operating on way less general information, because in the same way that information can't spread, knowledge can't spread as well. So, you know, nowadays we have, you know, teenagers who understand quantum theory because they fucking watched a YouTube series about it or whatever. But back then, like, people didn't know about anything other than these like specific things that they learned in school. And then people get specialized knowledge in crafts and fields. And then that's just kind of the thing that you know about. So you have all these people who don't know why this happened. It's just this random tragedy. And, you know, stuff like that is scary. It's like when things like that happen, where some horrible thing happens and you just can't explain it. And you have no idea why it happened, and you don't know when it's going to happen again. You don't know if it's going to happen to you. You could be driving on another bridge and then that bridge fucking collapses. People need to come up with permission structures for not being terrified, or create internal kayfabe of like, oh, I can just attribute it to that, and I don't have to spend my every waking moment being terrified of random, meaningless, horrible tragedies happening to me in any step I take, any place I go. So, you know, then you're like, oh, well, the bridge collapsed because the Mothman, he caused it because he wanted those people to die. But, you know, he's not going to kill me. He's not going to kill again. He's not going to collapse a different bridge. So I don't have to worry about this. I don't have to worry about the unknowable horror of, at any given moment, some random subtle thing that is not inherently malevolent. It's just a circumstance of a random chaotic universe could happen, and I could just be killed for no reason. My life just ended. That's the thing that's so fascinating to me, because that's a lot of the reason why these things happen, right? The reason why these stories crop up and they grow, and especially back in the past, and the reason why these things were bigger in the past, was because people were just always trying to attach meaning and create patterns and of things that they didn't understand that were happening that were scary.
The carnage and mass death of the accident prompted many people to come forward, claiming to have seen the Mothman sitting atop the bridge just prior to its collapse. The Ohio and West Virginia communities that had been so deeply affected by this trauma began to proffer ideas of religious significance for the Mothman's arrival. They claimed he was a harbinger of doom and pain, an otherworldly sign of impending loss. From here on, people would claim to see the Mothman all over the globe. Any instance of mass trauma or tragedy would be followed by people claiming to have witnessed the Mothman lurking in the shadows, or have caught in a reflection a glance at him.
And that continued on, like, all the way up until recently. Like, as recently as, like, as 9/11, people were saying that they saw Mothman fucking in the settling dust of the Twin Towers after they fell.
Yeah. So, the thing that's fascinating to me is how this character, who is obviously somebody being scared and being like, it was a bird. I mean, definitely not a bird. It was not a bird. There's no way it could have been a bird. They're scared and they can't admit that they were scared. So then it spawns this story, right? And it's almost kind of like every time there's a branching decision tree where somebody has the opportunity to admit, like, this is out of my control. This is bigger than me. I didn't know what was happening. This is crazy. This is unknowable. Whatever it is, it's just easier to put it on the Mothman. So it becomes this really strange sort of pan-cultural phenomena where he, like you said, he got, I think he was spotted at both World Trade Center attacks. The first one in the 80s, where they terrorists drove trucks filled with explosives into the bottom of the World Trade Center. I think that's what happened. It's been a while, but I think that's what the first World Trade Center attack was.
Yeah, there was bombs in cars that were in the underground parking structure or whatever.
Right. And people claim to have seen him there. People claim to have seen him in, like you said, 9/11. I've also seen people claiming that he is in the backgrounds of Holocaust photos, which... Okay.
You can see him reflected in several mirrors and windows all throughout the Snyder Cut.
If you watch Zack Snyder's Entertainment Tonight Zoom interview, you can see the Mothman in the mirror behind Zack the whole time.
In all seriousness, going back to the... I didn't mean to just totally derail that with a joke, but... Going back to the Holocaust thing, you know, that those things always, that's always where I'm just like, do we have to go there? Like, stuff like that, like, it just always starts to feel a little gross when you're just like, it's like that, or like the whole, that fucking aliens guy, like, where it's just like, yeah. and that too, the you think I'm going to say no guy.
You think I'm going to say no?
I think the "you think I'm going to say no" meme is completely unproblematic, but but the, you know, the ancient aliens guy.
Should we explain that, or are you just going to cut that out?
There's been a meme that has developed exclusively in texts back and forth between me and Dave. It's a meme that only exists in our text messages where we bounce ideas off of each other, but bouncing ideas off of each other sometimes can just end up feeling like this sort of fruitless effort because A, you know that the other person is going to like it and want to do it, and B, you know that we're not going to do it because we don't have time to do it. It's just throwing another idea on top of a pile of ideas that maybe we'll get to one day when we're done with all these other ideas that we're also already doing. So when you come up with an idea, you pitch it to the other person, and really the only thing that they can say is just like, yeah, I love it. Like, there's just nothing you can say to it because you're not, it's like, we're not going to criticize it, and we're also not going to do anything about it. So the only thing you can say is just like, yeah, sounds good, man. And so that morphed into, you think I'm going to say no? And then that became a meme. So now there's an actual meme that's a picture of Dave with his hair like spiked up, like he's like ripping his hair out in frustration or whatever. And he's just like shrugging at the camera next to like a Jenga game. I don't even know what the fucking, I don't even know what the context of the picture is.
Yeah, it came from when Nicole and I went to a cabin for her birthday, and we were playing this weird knockoff Jenga game at like 2 a.m. or something. And because what else are you going to do? It's a fucking pandemic. And I, through the course of that whole Jenga game, was just being a dick and like trying to take the most strategically inappropriate pieces out so the game would be over. But then it got super tall. It was like 35, you know, tiers tall. And it was just like, you would breathe on it and it would wobble. And I turned it into a bit where I was like pulling my hair out, like being performatively anxious that it was going to fall. And like, for some reason, I was like, we got to take a picture of this and send it to Andrew. So I like pulled my hair out, like almost to a cartoonish degree, and then posed next to it like a crazy person. And we sent it that to you. And then that somehow became the "you think I'm going to say no" image.
I took that image and I just added the text "you think I'm going to say no." And then the next time that Dave pitched me an idea, I just sent him that picture in response. And now we just send that picture back and forth to each other. It's just kind of a way of like responding to an idea when you like don't have anything else to say to it. But the Ancient Aliens guy and stuff like this, that's the direction that I don't want to push conspiracy theories, because then that just gets into the thing where you're just like, it's just this has this racial, racist connotation where you're like implying that these people just couldn't have possibly been capable of building pyramids, so it had to be aliens, or you completely trivialize the horrible evil deeds done by these people by insinuating that the Holocaust was like engineered by some kind of evil monster instead of the actual people who committed those horrible atrocities. It always goes there, right?
It always goes there. It always goes there.
You watch the Flat Earth documentaries and stuff like that. It's like, oh, cool. Yeah, these people believe that the Earth is flat. Like, that sounds goofy. And then it always goes to like, and then the Jews. And it's like, oh, fuck. God damn it.
Yeah, I just watched, I won't even say the name because I don't want to promote them because fuck those idiots. But there's a documentary about the reptilian conspiracy on Hulu right now. And it is so trippy that these people believe this. And I don't even think that the people making the documentary believe it. I think they're trying to make money off of people who get radicalized and believe it, like, you know, the Phantom Patriot or something like that.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is the right time to say this, but I've had this locked and loaded for this episode. But that just reminds me of watching documentaries and news clips and little feature pieces about Mothman. It just strikes me as so funny in these stories when you have these like reporters and journalists and documentarians walking around and they're interviewing these people, telling these stories. And, you know, they're being like an objective journalist. They're asking questions and taking it seriously. And it just strikes me as it's just so funny to me after a while, because it's like these like journalists just like with a straight face, just like listening to someone lie to them. And they know that they're lying and they're just like, yeah, so tell me more about that. So the giant monster, bird, moth creature, it appeared in front of you. And it's like, they know that they're fucking lying, but it's like this weird unspoken thing where it's just like, because I'm making this documentary about this, I'm just going to pretend like I'm entertaining this as a real thing. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that you give anybody making a claim about anything, even though they're 100% lying.
Yeah, just like no shadow of a doubt. Just like the person's name on the chyron beneath them is just replaced with Liar McLiarstein. Like, yeah, it's,
but yeah, they, you know, yeah, but you're right, though. That, but going back to what you said before, it's easy to just blame it on Mothman.
Blame it on the Mothman.
Well, I was going to go, honey came in and she caught me red-handed, creeping with the girl next door. It was Mothman. Picture this, we were both butt naked, banging on the bathroom floor. How could I forget that I had given her an extra key? All this time she was standing there, she never took her eyes off me.
Did you? Are you reading the lyrics? You looked up the lyrics?
Here we go. But she caught me on the counter. It was Mothman. Saw me banging on the sofa. It was Mothman. I even had her in the shower. It was Mothman. She even caught me on camera. It was Mothman. She saw the marks on my shoulder. It was Mothman. Heard the words that I told her. It was Mothman. Heard the screams getting louder. It was Mothman. She said she stayed until it was over.
At first, I was like, damn, you remember a lot of these Shaggy lyrics. What the fuck? And then I saw that you were reading it, and I got very disappointed. And then I had to remember that you had to pre-plan this and bring the lyrics, and then I loved it even more, because that's so silly.
I mean, I looked them up as you were talking, but
don't ruin this for me.
I knew a good deal of them. I just didn't remember all of them, so I just wanted to hedge my bets.
Man, I love it. I love it so much. In the early 1970s, a journalist named John Keel, born Alva John Keel, K-I-E-H-L-E, began to investigate the initial Mothman sightings. He became fascinated by how quickly the stories about this winged beast had spread. Eventually, his research developed into the now infamous book, The Mothman Prophecies. Giel's book investigates the origin of the creature through interviews with many of the initial eyewitnesses. He traveled to Point Pleasant, staying there for an extended period of time, researching and ultimately made some stunning conclusions about the Mothman. Conclusions which not everyone interested in urban legends agrees with.
That's not the made-up bullshit story that I want to believe. Which is, and that's really what it is. It's not like Bible scholars disagreeing on interpretations of the Old Testament or whatever. It's just a bunch of nerds being like, that story isn't cool to me.
Let me read this next bit and then we'll talk about that, because I think there is sort of an argument to be made for that John Keel introduced things into the Mothman mythology which were not there previously, that were only interesting to him, that now Mothman aficionados and Mothman fans have to grapple with in the public setting, which is an interesting discussion to have of like, when these urban legends that are produced by people retelling stories and adding their own versions, when a retcon that is not popular takes such a substantial hold of the public imagination, what does that do to the community that actually propelled the idea to the place where it could break out, which is interesting.
I mean, I don't know, but all I do know is that Greedo shot first.
Keel was particularly interested in UFOs and otherworldly phenomena that involved extraterrestrials. In the Mothman Prophecy book, Keel drew connections between the cryptid and UFOs, claiming that they simply had to be involved in the Mothman's existence and the existence of the other unexplained supernatural phenomena in the Point Pleasant area. In the book, Keel classifies the Mothman as part of a group that he calls ultra-terrestrials, otherworldly beings who walk among us in secret. Much of the Mothman prophecies is concerned with the connections and correlations between these ultra-terrestrials and the many sightings of alien visitors. No other person was so influential in galvanizing or propagating the legend of the Mothman in the popular culture. What was a deeply fringe and beloved regional character, who had a small pocket of success and sightings all over the globe, quickly became a creature that stood shoulder to shoulder with the likes of Bigfoot and the Jersey Devil. I love the idea that John Keel was just like, yeah, there's not really enough here to write a whole book about, so I'm just going to take the other shit I'm interested in and just like shove it sideways in here because fuck it.
And he did it. He fucking did it.
Also, can we just discuss that ultra-terrestrials is like a fucking great name?
Yeah. I mean, but it is funny though. It's funny that they say, I mean, not that this is like a globally acknowledged truth that everybody thinks is real. It's obviously sort of relegated to the small pocket of people that believe in Mothman, but it's sort of like this microcosm where you really see like just how that can happen, how over time, and this is even a, you know, this is from the 60s, this is a small microcosm where you can see how somebody can, there can be an idea and then somebody can just like add something to it, and then over time it gets sort of like mixed in with the rest of the story to the point where you come to like years later and then it's just become accepted as truth and part of it because somebody just arbitrarily added in this little, their little spice. And, you know, you can apply that concept to bigger, older concepts and you really start to think of like, oh, if that could happen in, you know, a handful of decades, imagine the things that could be added in and changed by human beings with self-serving motives over the course of thousands of years.
As a young man born in the New York area, Keel quickly developed a simultaneous interest in the otherworldly and in writing. After working in the newspaper industry and participating in the early days of radio and TV, Keel found himself in the army, serving in the Korean War on the staff of the American Forces Network in Frankfurt, Germany. After being honorably discharged, Keel began telling a tale so outlandish it simply had to be true. He claimed that he was actually employed in the art of psychological warfare while serving as a propaganda writer. In 1957, he published a book called Jadoo, which described his investigations into Indian rope tricks and also his search for the Yeti. Isn't that a fucking pairing? Isn't that a pairing? He's like, you know what? These guys in like these markets with these like rope tricks and these charming of snakes, I think they got the answer to the Yeti. I'm gonna go talk to them about this Yeti.
I mean, and he was the only one that thought of it. And he was living in the fucking year 4000.
The year Squatch 1000, more like it.
If you try to like mic drop on a joke and you almost choke to death, that's when you know that the joke wasn't funny.
Yeah, yeah, you really do. Yeah. While becoming involved in an amateur network of UFO hunters throughout the 60s and 70s, he paid the bills working in television, writing episodes of Get Smart, Monkees, and Lost in Space.
I love how that's just like a little, like a side thing. He's like, oh yeah, you know, I had this decades-long obsessive mission to prove the existence of ultra-terrestrials. It's like, oh yeah, what was your day job? How did you make money? Oh, I just wrote on Get Smart. You know, I had to do something.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I had to do something, you know. The Monkees, yeah, right? You know,
It's just like a footnote in his life. It's like, yeah, like in the same way you say like you waited tables through college or something like that. He's just like, yeah, I just, you know, I wrote on seminal comedy and science fiction shows from the golden age of television to, you know, fund my cryptozoological efforts.
The thing that's even crazier is this next line. Wait for this. But here's where Keel's involvement in the paranormal takes a turn. In 1967, Keel coined the term Men in Black to refer to a shadowy and secretive government agent who always seemed to materialize whenever there were extraterrestrials or cryptid sightings. This term first appeared in an article he wrote for Saga magazine titled UFO Agents of Terror. That's fucking insane to me. The guy who basically like solidified the myth of the Mothman is also the guy who like did the same thing for the Men in Black. Like obviously these concepts existed prior to him, but he's the Frank Miller to their Daredevil. He's the whatever the guy's name is that made Choochie Woochie.
Tony Baloney.
He's the Tony Baloney to Choochie Woochie, you know?
What's even crazier is that in the very next issue of Saga magazine, his story was just verbatim the screenplay to Hitch.
And he drew an illustration and it's just the poster with fucking Kevin James and Will Smith, but they're both like kind of the details. It's like you're like unfocusing your eyes because he drew it in 1967 before both of them were born. But yeah, no, it's so trippy to me that John Keel like named the Men in Black, basically created the Mothman, and spent his whole life writing all of these weird books that, you know, it makes you wonder, like, was he a true believer and he was spending his time this way because he wanted to expose the truth? Or is this all a lifelong kayfabe because he is a science fiction and comedy nerd and he thinks it's really funny to be like, the Mothman is an alien? Yum, 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 yum.
I don't know. All I know is that every time you sing,
here come the Men in Black, galaxy defend us. Oh, oh, oh.
He makes $1 million.
Yeah, I wish he did, but he didn't.
I don't even know if he's still alive.
No, he's dead. He passed away.
Mothman didn't predict that, did he?
Maybe he's not really dead. Maybe Mothman took him up in his flying UFO.
It's that fucking meme that is like the Grim Reaper with a dog, and he's like, it's time to go. Was I a good boy? You were the best boy, or whatever. But it's just the Mothman. It's like, it's time to go. Was I a good, crazy, conspiracy theorist, maniac, grifter? You're okay. You were no Bill Cooper.
This line of interest led Keel to Point Pleasant, where he began to draw many of his correlations between the Mothman sightings and strange visitors from outer space. His interest was first drawn to West Virginia after receiving a strange phone call and ongoing reports of mangled pets.
Which is actually the name of my hardcore band.
Strange phone calls and mangled pets?
Strange phone calls and ongoing reports of mangled pets.
It's a good name. Act 3. I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. Mothman. While the Mothman was semi-constantly in the public imagination due to Kiel's book, he waned in popularity in the 80s and 90s. However, he came roaring back.
We were too busy with Crystal Pepsi to worry about Mothman.
Yeah, Crystal Pepsi, that's how you get those real fucking Nostradamus.
We were like, ah, oh, check the fridge. Soda, purple stuff, not Mothman.
However, the Mothman came roaring back and reached new heights thanks to the 2002 film, The Mothman Prophecies, directed by Mark Pellington and starring, wait for it, Richard Gere and Laura Linney.
Yeah, we weren't ready for the Mothman until we got to the perfect decade for the Mothman, the 2000s, the like kind of B-tier, nothing really that interesting is going on right now. It's not as cool as the 90s, and there's like nothing really culturally galvanizing everybody, so we just kind of have to like scrape at the bottom of the barrel for like the sort of leftover dregs of the 90s. Like the perfect decade for the Mothman.
I would politely disagree and say that I would love like a 1978 Mothman movie starring Robert Redford as John Keel. I think that would be fucking awesome, because it would be like 3 Days of the Condor meets Close Encounters. You know, it would be just pulpy enough, but the script would be like a shitty pulpy movie, but they would get somebody really cool to direct it, and it would get just elevated enough. You know, like Dustin Hoffman would be John Keel maybe. And it would be taken just seriously enough that it would be a really cool movie, but it would be like the special effects would still be kind of shitty and practical, and it would have a texture to it. You know, maybe like I would love to see a Mothman Prophecies movie directed by John Borman. Like that would be amazing to me.
I mean, that would be way better than the movie that we got.
Yes. Yes, it would. But I feel like it would be perfectly timed, because I feel like the reason that Bigfoot really took off in America is that he got picked up into this slipstream of pop culture. You know, he was on $6 Million Man. He was, you know, in cartoons, you know, in the 80s. Like, he really became a cultural force to reckon with, partially because of the movie, you know, the two guys shot out in the middle of the fucking woods. We've done a whole episode on it. But also because he just kind of enveloped the culture in this weird way, where I feel like Mothman is like maybe low B-list, high C-list of cryptids. He's like really well known, but I don't think anybody really knows that much about him. He's just like, oh, it's a weird moth creature, which he literally isn't. He's a bird man. He's an alien bird man that predicts tragedies. But I don't think that normal people know that. Normal people think he's a giant moth dude.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's very obvious why Bigfoot, you know, persevered in the public consciousness, and the Mothman kind of wound up as this sort of like B-level, you know, afterthought. And, you know, this episode is just self-evident. I mean, listen to the Bigfoot episode and listen to this episode. What is the difference? There's no cricks. Where's Mothman's crick? And I don't mean like specifically a crick, but just like he doesn't have his own crick. There's no crick.
Yeah. Yeah. He also doesn't really have, aside from John Keel, he doesn't have a single person who's taken up the standard, right? That's out there beating the drum of the Mothman is real. The Mothman is real. I saw the Mothman. I'd be very interested to live in that world, though, where there is a Mothman convention. Well, there kind of is, but we'll get to that later.
Maybe we can start it. Maybe we can be those people. Oh my, Dave, the Mothman was behind you just now. He's pissing on your bed.
Dave, the Mothman is doing the you think I'm gonna say no face.
He just keeps posing in that meme behind you over and over again.
Dave, I think the Mothman wants to take over as the other member of the show. He's strangling Hilsmer.
I'm Mothman.
So we're basically, you know, we're at the point where the movie's, you know, it's in development, it's going to get made, and then slowly works its way through the process. And then, let's talk about it a little bit. The film was an adaptation of John Keel's book. However, the screenplay, adapted by Richard Haydom, had some key differences. It took more of an intellectual thriller approach to the subject matter, and it was kind of less of a creature feature, you know, displaying the winged menace for the world to see, and more of a, you know, thinking man's shadowy campfire tale. You know, obviously, Richard Gere stars in the movie as the John Keel character, but in the movie they changed his name to John Klein, and he's a reporter who's trying to research the legend of Mothman. Still grieving from the loss of his wife in a mysterious accident, Klein finds himself in Point Pleasant and hears of multiple sightings of a creature that has the townspeople deeply frightened. The more Klein investigates, the more his obsession with the Mothman grows, and he begins to harbor a deep-seated belief that if he can only solve this riddle, he will be able to some way find the answers to his wife's death. The film, like Keel's novel, incorporates the extraterrestrial components into the climax. While many true believers of the Mothman do not like this approach to the myth, this aspect of the legend has been constant ever since the book's release. So, you said you saw it in theaters. I actually have never seen the movie Mothman Prophecies.
I saw the movie. I would have to watch it again, and like, I could be completely wrong because I'm just remembering seeing this movie when I was a kid, and maybe I watch it again and I'm like, oh yeah, actually this is like a really interesting approach to this or something like that. I don't know. But with the full disclosure that this is like a child's remembered viewpoint on this, I just remember that the Mothman movie was just like completely disappointing because it's not really a Mothman movie. It's just like a psychological thriller about a guy uncovering some kind of truth about his wife's death that the Mothman is just like a setup to. Like the opening of the movie is that he's driving, him and his wife, played by Deborah Messing, are driving home from a party, and they're just like in a sports car and they're laughing. It's just like that scene in movies from the fucking 90s where it's just like you hear like the revving of the engine getting higher and higher, and they're in the middle of the woods driving home from like a party and laughing or whatever. And then they see the Mothman. He swerves to avoid it. And then they get out and it's gone. And then his wife dies. And then he's years later investigating this. And then he keeps like seeing his wife, and he like chases after her. And then he starts getting phone calls, and it's like a voice on the phone that's like saying cryptic things to him. And that's it. There's no, it's not about the Mothman. It's like, it's about like this weird psychological thriller plot where he's like uncovering secrets about his wife's death. And then it leads to like it's like aliens, and they abducted her or something. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it's like it's revealed that these aliens took her for some greater purpose or something like that. But yeah, I just remember being like, yeah, this fucking sucks. It's not about the Mothman at all. Like, he's literally just in the beginning of the movie. It's like the setup.
Is it a creature suit?
No, it's just like a blurry half second of like CGI.
Boo. At least give me the fucking weird like dude in a bird suit.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not about that at all. It's not about the Mothman. It's about
how would you, because I mean, I get the idea behind that though, because you know, Mothman as a concept is somewhat flawed because it's all of these weird fucked up stories that don't really have a central fear behind them. You know, like the Bigfoot or Sasquatch or Yeti or any of these, you know, myths about missing links. Like, obviously it's about man's deep-seated fear that we will lose the human contract and embrace our lesser selves and commit heinous acts of murder, right? And embrace the animal link between us all. You know what I mean? Like, what is, I don't even know, like, if, like, okay. You know, Andrew, thanks for coming in today to, Great Pictures of Tomorrow, the production company that makes Great Pictures of Tomorrow. We've got the rights to make the Mothman Prophecies, and we wanna make a remake, but we wanna do it right. We don't wanna make this bullshit Richard Gere intellectual thriller gerbil up my butt movie. We wanna make the real Mothman Prophecies. So we wanna hear your take. What's your take on the Mothman Prophecies movie?
All right, so two cucks and their wife and their wives are driving down a country road in the middle of the night. It's 2 a.m. They can't even look at each other in the eye because of the stuff that they were just doing. It's a really awkward, quiet car ride. You could hear a needle drop in the forest.
Let me just stop you right there, Andrew. I love cucks. Cucks are coming back in a big way. We are in. Keep going.
Okay. And then just out of nowhere, just the fucking Mothman just plows out from.
Oh, it's a polyamorous thing. The Mothman's gonna start plowing.
I mean, you're kind of getting ahead of my joke here, but the Mothman comes out of the forest and they almost hit him, and then they swerve, and then they stop and they get out of the car and they're like, what the fuck was that? And then they just hear like the gentle rhythmic wah of a guitar coming out of out of the woods, and a warm glow emanates, and they follow it in, and they go into the woods, and they get to this place where there's these overhead lights, and there's shag carpet everywhere, and the Mothman is there, and he's wearing like a fluffy robe, and he's just carrying, he's got four arms, and each arm has a glass of champagne in it. And he looks at them and he goes, I predict that we about to fuck.
And the rest of the movie is just like the rest of the movie is just like practical effects of like really like Giger-esque fucked up sex stuff with like people having sex with bizarre appendages that are like penis shaped, and yeah, I'm into it.
But to your point, yeah, I don't know what the fuck the Mothman is about. I don't know what my like psychological interpretation of that character is. I don't know how to adapt that to a modern the modern zeitgeist. And like I said, I could watch that movie now and be like, oh, this is fucking great. Like they did this is a really interesting thing that they did with it. I don't know. I'm just talking about when I was a kid and just being like, this is not a horror monster movie. This has nothing to do with Mothman.
Yeah. Aside from doing some sort of kind of like schlocky, the Mothman takes over a town and starts killing people Pumpkinhead style. Like if you're making that movie, yeah, I could see that movie being made. In fact, there might even be that movie. Like that, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a Mothman movie that I don't know about that's that. I don't think there is, but
I mean, honestly, the fact that director is a pedophile aside, Jeepers Creepers is kind of like a Mothman horror movie.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So yeah, I don't really know what you do with him other than that. Like maybe you know what? I could see a version of it where it's almost kind of like the Mothman, something about him kills people. Like his visage is so horrifying that it literally blows people's minds, and they go insane, and it's, you know, kind of Lovecraftian, but like he's here to try and warn humanity about something. Like, so the Mothman shows up and he's like, my other alien homies are gonna invade the planet. You need to prepare.
He's like, bro, I gotta tell you something. Oh, god damn it. He's gone fucking mad again. Another fucking insane person who's viewed my visage and lost their mind.
Yeah, because like I really don't know what you do unless it's kind of like a Bigfoot hunting movie where it's about a bunch of people trying to find the Mothman, which even then, like, okay, so it's like people like wandering around in the woods in a small town. Like
that movie still ends with the gentle rhythmic wah of a guitar.
Hell yeah.
They go into the woods. I predict that we're gonna fuck.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I don't know how you turn, you know, unless you make this like a serious, I don't know how you make it a serious movie. You know what I mean? Like I, you know what though? I could see a version of it where it's kind of this idea, but it is more like we were talking about that 1978 John Borman, Robert Redford, kind of All the President's Men, if there were monsters, where it's like you follow Richard Kiel. He gets interested in it. He, you know, is a guy who's obsessed with paranormal stuff. He goes to Point Pleasant. He interviews all these people. And you're almost like, you never know if he is or isn't gonna find the Mothman. You know, like it's kind of like a character study of this guy of like, why are you searching for the Mothman? And then, you know, he's interviewing all the townsfolk and they all seem very, you know, not reputable. Like they all have their own little axes to grind with each other. And it's kind of like a detective movie. And then the end would be, oh, actually, they weren't lying. The Mothman is real. And you get 5 to 10 minutes of the Mothman, and the Mothman kidnaps John Kiel at the end of the movie.
I predict that we're gonna fuck.
Yeah, like I could see that. Like that could be cool, you know? Or maybe there's a bunch of kids going and disappearing in Point Pleasant. So you give it some sort of human connection and John Keel goes there to try and save these kids. And everybody in the town keeps seeing Mothman. And at the end of the movie, they fight the Mothman. And it's a little bit more of a traditional kind of Jaws structure. Like I could see that maybe working as a movie, but it's also kind of like Mothman as a character is kind of flawed as a setup because he's a birdman. He's not a moth. And titling a movie a Mothman, you expect it to be a giant moth. So you know that
the reason why he doesn't kind of work as a movie character and probably the reason why they made the movie the way that they did, it goes back to what I said in the beginning, which is the thing that is so scary, at least to me, and obviously this is my own personal perspective, but I kind of feel like this is what is scary about the Mothman is that like you don't see him really. He's like a brief flash and you don't really fully understand his motives. And that's the scary part is like, what the it's not like the other cryptids where you have a very detailed like explanation of what they look like. And there's sometimes just literal footage of them and you kind of know what they're about. Like the Mothman, the thing that was scary about the Mothman to me as a kid was just like, what the fuck does it want? Like, what is like, this shit is ominous as hell.
Yeah, maybe it's something along the lines of like a Slenderman movie, you know, where the Mothman is, there's no explanation for what the Mothman's motivation is. He's just trying to warn us about this thing. And it's almost a final destination thing where like, you know that these people are going to die, but it's not that they're going to die. It's how they're going to die. And so maybe there's that, but that seems really hard to pull off because what are you going to have him showing up every 5 minutes and being like, you're going to die. And then like, you're just like waiting for like rebar to like fall off of a truck and kill somebody. Like it's just,
he's like, bro, change lanes, get out from behind that truck with the poles coming out of the back. Trust me, bro.
It's just hard. Like, I don't think he's not well enough defined to support a movie, really. Unless maybe you delve into the fact that he's an alien support, which I don't really like. Like personally, I like him more as like this weird culture. Like I like him as Watu the Watcher, where he's been like watching humanity for like hundreds of years, and he's this old creature, and he keeps seeing these recurring looping cycles within humanity, and he's almost kind of like impotent in his inability to stop it. And so he's this otherworldly force that shows up and is just like, yo, humans, be better. Don't do that fucking stupid thing that you're about to. Ah, shit, you're dead. The bridge collapsed. Fuck.
Yeah, John Keel really just Highlander 2 The Quickening did up.
Yeah, like no one needs aliens in, I don't like aliens.
We didn't need this, man. We didn't need this.
No, yeah, it's not, you know. It really is Highlander 2, The Quickening. It's just not what
And then you
want.
Try to do the Renegade cut, and it's like, yeah, I mean, this is better, but it's still, you're still just, like, moving around, like, puzzle pieces in a shitty puzzle.
Yeah, yeah, it's not cool. I actually don't hate the Renegade cut, but yeah, sorry, John Keel, rest in peace. Thank you for all your work, but I really don't. I love the idea of ultra-terrestrials. I don't like the idea, though, that he's, like, in connection with aliens. I'd like the idea of ultra-terrestrials as Earth-based things that are just really powerful.
But this goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is that that's the reason, like, that's literally what it is. It's the people who don't like the stuff that he added to it, they're just the people, they're the same as the people who were just like, oh, Highlander 2 sucked, like you ruined the canon. Like it's not about like this is true or you've like made up lies that aren't the truth. It's just like this, I just don't like what you were, I don't like the direction you took the story, like
yeah absolutely. Especially with something like him, because unlike Bigfoot, Mothman really isn't something you can hunt. You know what I mean? Like he's not like it's not Loch Ness Monster or something where like in the initial conception where it was just like this small town that this weird creature lived in. Okay. But now that it's kind of expanded past that and he's been seen all over the world and presaged all these horrible tragedies, it's like nobody really thinks he's real. I mean, there are people who claim to, but it's kind of kayfabe. They're kind of just like, they like the story. They like the idea that there's this otherworldly dark deity that like warns humanity and we kind of can't get out of our own way, you know?
Well, it's interesting. It reminds me because, you know, we a lot of the a lot of these conspiracy theories and urban legends, you know, back then, but even now, they're usually tied to grifts where, like, you know, the Bigfoot stuff, it was just like a handful of people during a certain point of time who were just trying to make money off of a thing. And it continues to be that, where every couple of years you have someone who's like, I found Bigfoot's dick in the like in the snow, perfectly preserved in my backyard. And then they show you just like a picture of a fucking giant hairy dick. And they're just like, here it is, motherfuckers, Bigfoot's dick. Come out here, scientists, and examine this. And they're like, all right, we're getting our dick examination tools, and we'll be right out there. We can tell if this is an authentic Bigfoot dick within a 99% accuracy within 48 hours. And they're like, yep, come do it. Fucking do it. It's right here. And then they travel out there and they're like, well, oh shit, someone stole the Bigfoot dick. Oh no, you'll never be able to verify that was totally true what we said. And that happens like every 4 years. And it's people trying to get money or get like 15 minutes of fame. And modern conspiracy theories are like that too. Like, there's a lot of people who genuinely believe in the QAnon bullshit, but all of that stuff comes from a handful of people who are using it as a grift, who are trying to get internet famous or sell merchandise or whatever. And then the byproduct of it is that a bunch of people actually believe it. The Mothman thing is interesting because it doesn't seem like it really has that. Like, other than John Keel, who, you know, I guess you could say he was like trying to sell books or whatever, like, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of like the myth doesn't seem to have come from a bunch of grifters. It seems to have come from a bunch of people collectively like hearing this story. And as we were talking about before, using it as a permission structure to make themselves feel better about fucked up tragedies that happened near them. And that's really interesting. It's different. That's almost more interesting than just the actual myth itself. Is like the fact that it's spread in a different way than a lot of the other urban legends.
Yeah, it's a salve for grief as opposed to an expulsion of an inner trauma. The film The Mothman Prophecies debuted on January 22nd, 2002, to mixed reviews from Mothman fans and general audiences alike. Many have said that Richard Gere was miscast in the film, while others felt that the film was too derivative of The X-Files. Ultimately, it is remembered as a film with a highly recognizable name, but not many people actually watched it. The simple dichotomy likely helped the legend of the Mothman to expand even further than typically it would have in the wake of a poorly executed film. Which is really, that's actually really funny to me too, that like, the Mothman Prophecies movie is low-key not a Mothman movie, and also wasn't that successful. If you're unaware, in Hollywood, January is referred to as Dump Month, because it's when everybody puts their verified stinkers on the release schedule. And so
it's also when I save up all my dumps for the whole year.
Yes.
I just get it all out of the way. Beginning of the year, I'm done. Save so much time. You think of all the time you get back from all those little trips to the bathroom throughout the year.
Yep. Yeah. Why would you even like fuck with dumping when you could just do it in January?
Yeah.
365 days in a year, man.
Mm-hmm. Just do it. Use 1 month.
1 month. Dump month.
Mm-hmm. And then you have just the whole rest of the year to do whatever.
Whatever you want. But yeah, it's fascinating to me that the Mothman low key is like not particularly famous. The movie wasn't very good. He isn't even in the movie, really. But that almost like propelled him even further into being even more amorphous. Because after the movie, it's even like he's kind of just around, like you just hear the name Mothman, but like there's never real sightings of him. It's just these photos of like him at tragedies that kind of pop up on the internet. And that's kind of it, which is a really weird, interesting version of the history of a cryptid.
Our boy Onyx the Fortuitous saw the Mothman.
That's true. He did. Today, Point Pleasant has fully embraced the legacy of their urban legend. Jeff Walmsley, a local area Mothman expert and aficionado, runs the aptly named Mothman Museum. It's the only one of its kind in the world. The Mothman Museum has props from the film, replicas of the Mothman and what he would have looked like, photographs taken by individuals who were able to snap a quick picture of the creature, and newspaper clippings from across the globe. So we're watching a video that somebody made of their trip to the Mothman Museum. It's a little walkthrough, a little kind of handheld, like, you know.
Hey, you all. Carpetbagger here. We are on
point. It's a YouTuber named The Carpetbagger.
These YouTube channels are so funny to me. I watched a bunch of these for researching the Disney World episode, and there's just a ton of channels like this where it's people that just like have a channel where they're like, I go to places in the world and just like walk through it, and they're all the same. They all have the exact same vibe, the exact same tone. The hosts are always the same person.
I'm not going to lie, man. Watching this, like, I really want to go to the Mothman Museum. Like,
I don't know. My impression of this is, like, this museum fucking sucks. Like, I spent a good deal of my childhood hanging out in the UFO Museum in Roswell, New Mexico. And I always thought, like, man, I feel sorry for people who travel from across the world to come to this, because it's, I can't imagine it being anything short of disappointing. But the UFO Museum is like the fucking Guggenheim compared to this.
This is my idea of heaven. There's like really shitty papier-mâché, homemade sculpted Mothman figurines everywhere. There's like a weird, like, it seems like somebody's mom made a giant Mothman that's hanging from the ceiling. There's like costumes that are supposedly,
it's a room with some shit on some tables.
He's got a blanket that came in contact with both Deborah Messing and Richard Gere. That's
the politically correct way of saying that they fucked on it, though. Because that from the scene, I predict that we're gonna fuck. And then three-way orgy between Richard Gere, Deborah Messing, and Mothman.
There's literally nowhere on earth I would rather go more than this. This is... They have a chapstick, a cherry-flavored chapstick from the movie, under glass. That is my ideal. That is all I want in life, is to go.
To be fair, though, that's almost really not as funny as that actual moment in the movie, where it's like, have you ever seen a jump scare / creepy moment in a movie that was product placement?
I love this. Oh, it's so good. This is so right up my alley. Like, I love kind of rinky-dink, do-it-yourself shit. Like, in comics, there's no money. There's not even really a fan base. It's like seven guys in a hotel room. Like, that's kind of what I miss about a lot of these conventions that happen now, because they're now, like, they've evolved into pop culture conventions where people are coming to meet Jason Momoa. And that's awesome. Like, that's cool. You get to meet the actor from the show that you like. I support that.
I didn't get to fucking meet Jason Momoa at Comic-Con. I just saw your dumbass.
Yeah, it's true. But I just love this stuff where it's like, you can just tell there's, you know, I don't need to know that the museum was run by one guy, you know, Jeff Walmsley. I don't need to know that. I know that Jeff Walmsley rum. They're selling stuffed Mothmans for $8. I want one of those Mothmans. I love this. I love this so much that it's just like a guy rented a storefront and was like, I'm going to make a Mothman museum. I'm going to like make some papier-mâché Mothmans. And maybe somebody will give me like $5 to look at it. Jeff Walmsley, I will give you $5 to look at that fucking Mothman's.
Well, then the UFO Museum would blow your mind.
See, but that's the thing is, I don't even, maybe, I don't know. I don't know, is it cool? Is it cool like that? Because that's kind of what I love. I love shit that's terrible.
I mean, it's just a better version of that.
Then let's go.
It's not like, when I say it's way better than that, I don't mean that it's like state of the art and like really well done. I mean that it's like, it's that, like, this was just put together by a bunch of crazy people, and it's just a bunch of random made up bullshit, like, hung on walls and stuff, and then, like, weird paper mache models of grays and stuff, but just, like, way better than just, like, a room with a blanket on a table.
I'm so into it. I'm so into it on both ends. I want to go to the UFO museum. I want to go there. I want to see it all. I've been trapped in my house for a year. When this is over, I'm going to do something weird. I'm going to go somewhere. Maybe I'm going to go to fucking Point Pleasant, West Virginia. In fact, a couple weeks ago, I was looking up the dates for next year for Small Press Expo, which happens in DC. And then I was like, hey, Nicole, what if after Small Press Expo, we just stayed and then went to West Virginia and went to the fucking Mothman museum? And she was like, that does not sound fun to me. And I was like, no, come on. It's a fucking Mothman museum, though. Like, come on. Let's go to the Mothman museum. The museum features handwritten depositions from eyewitnesses, original drawings made by people who claim to have had interactions?
I predict that we're gonna fuck.
The museum features handwritten depositions from eyewitnesses, original drawings made by people who claim to have witnessed or had interactions with the Mothman, and a short documentary film that screens at regular intervals. Mothman Prophecies author John Keel himself is featured in the documentary, offering his recollections about the time he spent in Point Pleasant. In the 4 years since the sighting, Point Pleasant has erected a Mothman statue in the center of the town. Standing over 10 feet tall, this metallic sculpture serves as a reminder to all of the locals to never forget the legacy of the terrifying winged creature from the great beyond. In fact, the town has embraced their love of Mothman so much that they have an annual Mothman festival. Every year, on the third weekend in September, come hell or flying harbingers of doom, the town of Point Pleasant celebrates the rash of unearthly sightings all those years ago. The legend of Mothman is a bizarre story that has been firmly cemented into the public consciousness. For more than half a century, it has taken wing from local tall tale to international mystery, capturing the imaginations of people from all walks of life. Mothman has been viewed as a harbinger of great loss. Some have even claimed to have witnessed him in the shadows of Chernobyl or in the plumes of smoke after 9/11. One thing that can be said for sure about the Mothman is that he's not going away anytime soon. I've low-key fallen in love with the Mothman. Like, doing the research for this, I was like, I love all of this. I love how unwieldy it is. I love how fucked up and janky it is. I love the fact that he's not a moth. It's so funny to me that he is a birdman, and he's named the Mothman because some idiot news reporter tried to rebrand the story and then didn't really think about the fucking fallout of naming him the Mothman. It's so funny to me.
Yeah, and also just the fact that it was a bird.
Like, it was 100% a bird that they saw on the fucking road.
In fact, people, the many, whatever you call them, bird experts and, you know, biological scientists and things like that, they've pretty much pinpointed what they're fairly sure was what the original people saw on that night, which is a sandhill crane, which is a large bird that can have a wingspan, or typically has a wingspan, up to 6.5 feet. So this is a large bird that if you saw in the middle of the night, it would look like a big fucking monster. And it has large red, the feathers around its eyes are red, coupled with the glare of animals' eyes when they're illuminated by a light, like headlights. People are fairly sure that what these people saw was a sandhill crane. And there's even further speculation that it might have, well, that's kind of what scientists say, that when they've gone on record and addressed this, that they're pretty sure it was that, because there are sandhill cranes in the area this area where this event occurred. And then there are also people that say that it could have even been a mutated sandhill crane, because there's a lot of speculation about the fact that there are animals in this area that had become mutated because of the chemicals that had tainted the groundwater in that area from the TNT factory. The military conducted a study in, I think it was the 80s, and they determined that the water in that area had become infected by this mixture of water and cellite, which was a compound, a chemical that was used to rinse the TNT during the production process. And it had seeped into the groundwater and had infected all of the surrounding water supplies and streams and rivers. And so there's speculation that there were animals that had become mutated by drinking this tainted water.
TNT, the Mothman.
Exactly. So yeah. And then from there, it just becomes a thing. It becomes like a, you know, that it becomes a meme. As we talked about in the Bigfoot episode, how Bigfoot was a meme. And, you know, and then also coming back to what we talked about earlier with the whole thing about Bigfoot being this grift where a handful of people were just trying to make money off of these schemes.
If you're not familiar, the people that filmed the original movie, Bob Gimlin and I'm blanking on the other guy's name. It was Bob Gimlin and whatever, the other guy, these two guys, they filmed that initial, you know, the really famous footage of Bigfoot walking. And then the other guy, he basically made a like Pentecostal tent revival show out of screening that footage. And he toured all around the country for years doing a vaudeville show, showing the footage of the Bigfoot and then giving a talk and a presentation. And yeah, it's not even like
the Wiggles open for him.
Yeah, the Wiggles open for them. So it's not even like a passive like, oh, yeah, they were just trying to make money. Like, no, they literally made a full theater show around screening this footage and were actively monetizing it.
Yeah. And so, you know, so kind of combining those two ideas. This one story popped up, and then a lot of people, you know, first it was just in this town, and then it was like in a, you know, the scope of it kind of widened as the story kind of got more famous, and then eventually it became, you know, across the country. And then I guess at some point it became worldwide of just, you know, a lot of people who just heard about this story. And then, you know, they wanted to get in on that. They wanted to become part of the zeitgeist. They were there for some kind of tragic event that happened or something that happened near them. And, you know, through some combination of just wanting to be a part of the story and also a subconscious desire to explain something horrible that happened to them or to somebody that they knew or something that happened near them. They were just, you know, they were like, yeah, me too. I saw the Mothman. And it reminds me of that concept, kind of reminds me of the Mandela effect. And I'm going to go up on Papa Pricey's soapbox for a second here, because I fucking hate the Mandela effect. I hate it. It's the fucking dumbest phenomenon bullshit thing ever. I hate it so much because it's fake. It's not real. One person posted on the internet that they remembered it as the Bernstein Bears. And then it was just a bunch of other people who wanted to be a part of the meme. Like, that was all it was. You have all these people saying like, oh yeah, this is my Mandela effect that I saw. They just want to be a part of the meme. That's all. These things are not real. This one guy misremembered the Berenstain Bears as the Bernstein Bears, because as a kid, you look at these books and you see Berenstain and you don't know what that fucking means. You've never heard of that before. So your mind just auto-corrects it to the nearest thing that makes sense to you. People have heard the name Bernstein before. So you're like, oh yeah, Bernstein. Of course, that's what it is. And then later on you read it again and you're like, wait a minute, I remember it as Bernstein, not Berenstain. Somebody said that on the internet. It became a meme, and then everybody else wanted to glom onto the meme. So they were just like, oh yeah, I totally remembered that fucking Sinbad was the genie in a movie called Shazam. It's like, no, you didn't. You just made this shit up. And then everybody else is like, yeah, me too. Because everybody is collectively just trying to be part of a meme. It's not a real phenomenon. It's a bunch of people who want to be a part of a meme. And this was kind of the same thing. It was just a bunch of people being like, yeah, I saw the Mothman too. Because they just wanted to be a part of the story. It's motivated completely by that.
I'm Dave Baker.
And I'm Andrew Price.
This has been Deep Cuts. You can find us on the internet In many places, you can find me at heydavebaker.com, or you can find my books, Action Hospital, Fuck Off Squad, Night Hunters, Seven's Reckoning, a bunch of cool signed copies of Seven's Reckoning up there right now if you want to get all four issues signed by ya boy, Andrew. Also, the Mystery Treehouse Investigation Agency patch is also available on my website for $5. Andrew, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me in the woods with my swinger wife and my, our two closest friends, raw dogging the Mothman from all angles. And he, you know, he's got everything. He's got all, you know, let's just say that all four of us can have a go at the same time. And you can also find me at dapricewrites.com, where you can get my book, Deadbolt, AI Private Eye. It's a story about a futuristic robot detective solving crimes and dealing with the existential woes of being granted artificial intelligence and sentience without fully being acknowledged as a actual living entity in a world that wants to capitalize off of the labor and benefits of artificial intelligence without acknowledging the sentience of creatures that are not human in origin. And you can also get the Deadbolt, or you can also get the Mystery Treehouse Investigation Agency patches from my website, as well as the official merch store on deepcutspod.com.
This was fun. Let's do it again next week. That's all I got to say.
I thought you were going somewhere with that. Like, just the first time you've ever added anything on to the end of that, and it just ended immediately. Deep Cuts is a production by Boy Genius Media. If you'd like to find this show and others like it, please visit boygeniusmedia.com or deepcutspod.com.
If you want to join in on post-episode discussions, please join the Deep Cuts Podcast Facebook group. Finally, subscribe to our YouTube channel for additional video content.
The incidental music for this episode was created by D. Catalano, whose music can be found at wekeepoddhours.bandcamp.com. And the Dead Boy Detectives.